Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome to another edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your co-host for the night, JR, just filling in for Jason Brown, who's handling some fatherly duties and some business things right now, so he's unable to join us tonight. I do want to go ahead and introduce my other co-host as well. Yinka, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. You know, I just had a long day at work, getting back, getting relaxed. Thursday night football is coming up a little bit later, but, you know, I'm actually really excited for this podcast, so, you know, it's been a good day.
And my other co-host, wide receiver one, Miles, how you doing?
I'm good. Enjoying my first full week at my new job. Having a really good time there and excited about this pod too. It should be a really good one.
That's great to hear. And, you know, I'm doing good as well. We have a very, very special guest that we're excited to have on tonight. He's known as Pro Football Doc on Twitter, Dr. David J. Chow. He's currently a Sirius XM in medical analysis. He worked with the Chargers for 17 years and a plethora of other experience in other areas as well. Dr. Chow, just want to introduce you and how are you doing tonight? And thank you for joining us.
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, I just want to open up the floor to you, Dr. Chow, and anything you want us to know and just explain yourself, your background, your previous experience, or anything else of that sort.
Sure. The main thing is I'm an orthopedic surgeon, sports medicine specialist, the head team position for the San Diego Chargers, and worked with that team for 17 years. Of note, I did spend a little time as an assistant physician in Minnesota way back in the Dennis Green era with the Vikings, et cetera, and just started doing stuff on Twitter and have enjoyed it, and it's grown. I call what I do the medical Mike Pereira. You know, what Mike Pereira does for refereeing, I kind of do for medical. I try to translate what the injuries mean. And then I also do, some video analysis like Mike Pereira does. He says, is that or isn't that a touchdown? I try and say, is that or is that not? What kind of injury? Is it an ACL? Is it an MCL? And try to do that for video. It's not a game. But for 17 years when I was with the team, every Sunday, you know, football game on the field, looking at them on the sidelines in the locker room, and then the day after on Monday, including an MRI, then I would go upstairs to the video room with Brian Duddy and the guys, the video boys, and they would show me all the video clips of the injuries, and I kind of reverse engineered how some of them happened, and I think it's allowed me to be not 100%, you know, 95% or so accurate in terms of looking at injuries. And this is a Vikings podcast, and don't hate me, during the game, as part of the San Diego Union Tribune, I did write an article indicating that unfortunately Dalvin Cook tore his ACL in a fairly classic mechanism, but that's kind of what I try and do, give fans a first look at sort of the injury side.
And that's a perfect segue to the first injury that we want to talk about, which is Dalvin Cook, who was really our star running back, rookie running back. He showed a lot of promise, and, you know, he just took one wrong step, Doc, and he ended up tearing his ACL. Can you just shed some light on that injury and exactly what his timetable is for his return?
Well, first of all, not all ACL injuries are the same. I mean, you're well aware of Teddy Bridgewater's injury being called an ACL and other structures. That clearly was a knee dislocation, so there were some pretty significant other structures. The question is, was it isolated or not? And there are some reports, I think Coach Zimmer said, that Dalvin Cook had some meniscus and cartilage damage. So that would imply meniscus, the pads in his knee, as well as the articular cartilage. So he's not isolated. That shouldn't detract from his ACL return in terms of 2018. Obviously, you guys are very familiar with Adrian Peterson's return that's sort of referred to all the time, where, you know, he got hurt late season and then had a great following year after 9 months of rehab. The advantage for Dalvin is that he's got more than 9 months of rehab. because he got hurt earlier in the season. However, reports of meniscus and cartilage tear may make it a little more difficult. I don't think it's going to change his 2018 recovery, but it could, not for sure would, but it could have long-term implications if there is significant meniscus or articular cartilage damage down the road, being that he's a rookie sensation and he's got a lot of years left, we hope.
Miles Ayinka, did you have anything to add on to that or any questions for Doc about Dalvin Cook's injury?
Yeah, this is Ayinka. I appreciate you coming on, Doctor. I had a quick question as far as Dalvin. One thing that Dalvin does a really good job with is, you know, kind of his explosion and his quick burst that he has. Do you foresee him being able to retain that with the injury, or what can we expect from Dalvin maybe in 2018 and maybe in a few years down the road?
Well, that's a great question, and expectations are very high, after what Adrian Peterson did, what he did. We'd all probably be talking about Adrian Peterson rushed for 2,000 yards the year after. Remember, Jamal Charles had his first ACL tear the same year, and he rushed for a career-high 1,500 yards that same year, and he got overshadowed. What made Adrian Peterson's recovery special is not the fact that he was able to go in 9 months. There are plenty of examples of that, and even shorter, is that he rushed for 2,000 yards and seemed completely himself. Typically, after an ACL reconstruction, it's the second season back that really makes you 100% yourself again. That's not to say Dalvin Cook can't be special again next year like he had been special this year, but typically, biologically speaking, if Dalvin Cook is not quite himself year one coming back, don't write him off. Year two is usually better.
Miles, did you have any other questions to add on for Dalvin Cook's injury?
Not really. I think you touched on all the points that, you know, were kind of the key points here.
I think what he's trying to say is I said too much.
No, not at all. I think the more you talk here, the better for us.
We really appreciate your input and for having you on once again, Doc. Now, on the subject of knee injuries, we've had some really bad luck here with our quarterbacks here recently. We talk about Sam Bradford, who suffered a bone bruise, and Teddy Bridgewater, who completely shattered his knee, to put in easy terms for us anyway. I know you can go more in detail about that, but there was a video released from practice of Sam Bradford today, and he talked about him not really stepping into his throws and just explained to us exactly what's going on with this bone bruise and exactly what's expected of his recovery going forward.
Happy to do that. And this is probably a good time for me to mention that I think your listeners are probably pretty fervent fans. And if you really want more details that can be provided here, go to profootballdoc.com, the San Diego Union Tribune website. There's about 150 articles on there. And if Sam Bradford or Dalvin Cook are on the front page, there's a section where you can just click on quarterbacks or click on running backs and get the details. I've written several articles about Sam Bradford and what a bone bruise means. And the take-home message is this. There's really two types of bone bruise. There's a type of bone bruise where, let's say, you take a helmet to your shin. That truly is a pain tolerance issue in day-to-day. The other main kind of bone bruise is what I would call a periarticular bone bruise, where the bone around a joint, let's say knee joint, near the surface of the knee joint is bruised. And those are ones you need to be careful of. By video, by talk, etc., it appears that's what Sam Bradford has. I'm not trying to besmirch what Mike Zimmer is saying all along about day-to-day. We all know what coach speak is and how coaches need to remain optimistic. And quite honestly, the other team is listening. So to try and do some misdirection here and there, I'm not criticizing the Vikings or Coach Zimmer. But reality is a periarticular bone bruise, like I believe Sam Bradford has, is not a day-to-day issue. It's a week-to-week issue. In a very recent example in baseball, the most famous bone bruise recently is Bryce Harper, where everyone thought he tore his ACL slipping across the bag at first base, and he ended up missing 7 weeks of time. Recently, Big Ben and Dez Bryant had a bone bruise in the last year or two, and they each missed 3 or 4 weeks. I have to go back and look. I don't remember. But it's not a pain tolerance issue, because the worry is that it can be made worse and have long-term issues with the articular cartilage surface if you return too quickly. So unfortunately, as soon as Tom Pelissero of NFL Network reported a bone bruise on Sam Bradford, I started saying this easily could be a month, 6 weeks, or more, but it certainly wasn't a day-to-day thing. It was a week-to-week thing. And if he does play this week, and I have my doubts that he will, that this would mean that he's been out for 4 weeks. So this is why I say it really does look like it's a periarticular bone bruise. It's smart of the Vikings and Sam Bradford to be careful on this. This is not just a pain tolerance issue.
And Doc, you talk about how it's not just a pain tolerance issue. What exactly is the issue that Sam Bradford is facing since he's been out the past few weeks?
Well, think of it this way. If you think of your articular cartilage as grass on a football field, and you think of the bone underneath the articular cartilage as dirt, okay, now it doesn't apply in Minnesota. You guys have the sport grass, et cetera. But the bottom line is, if you have a natural grass football field and an elephant stomps on the grass and then sort of compacts the dirt a little bit, if you continue to play football on that grass, the overlying grass might die. The articular cartilage over the top needs the support of the bone underneath. The grass on top needs the support of the dirt underneath. If that dirt's been compacted or damaged in some way, shape, or form, you're better off keeping off the grass and giving the grass a chance to recover, letting the articular cartilage recover. Otherwise, if you go too quickly and the grass dies and the articular cartilage is damaged, that's long-term implications. And so that's why you need to be kind of careful about all of this.
And Miles and Yinka, did you guys have anything to add on or any questions about Sam Bradford's knee injury?
Yeah, I'm curious as far as, you know, you obviously talked about the long-term implications, as well as some of the, you know, short-term implications. So just looking at long-term, when a team is really interested, like the Vikings or maybe even a potential other team, what kind of precautions should they take, knowing that Sam Bradford's knees might not hold up, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road? Like what are maybe the medical staff on teams telling, you know, GMs or whatever about Sam Bradford and how they should proceed with him, do you think?
Well, the main thing is to let the bone bruise subside. And if the swelling and edema in the bone go away, his risk decreases significantly. And between Sam and his agent and the team, I'm sure they're going to end up doing the right thing and then move on from there. So assuming he puts this behind him, like Des Bryant has and Big Ben has, I don't see this particular episode as a big deal for him down the road. Of course, when you've had the bone bruise and you've had the ACL surgeries on his knee, you know, there's already always some concern going forward. But I see this bone bruise as more of a short-term concern, and short meaning measured in weeks or months or more, rather than years, assuming he gives it the appropriate rest.
And one more question on that topic. Is there any chance for potentially any additional damage, whether it be around the knee or just the general, that area at all because of this injury? Or do you think that, you know, once this heals up, he should be fine?
Once he heals up, he should be fine. But, you know, obviously if you put Sam Bradford or any player out there at less than 100% and he's not as mobile or he's a half step slower, you put a lot of things at risk. You know, from his throwing shoulder to his head to any part of his body. I mean, if the defensive players can catch you that much easier and you're one step less mobile, et cetera, yeah, there's the potential for injury all over the place in terms of what's going on. And the comment I made earlier about stepping into throws is, you know, obviously potentially affects your accuracy. And if you're throwing more with your arm as opposed to stepping in and through a throw, it changes potentially your accuracy. And so that's why I said the way they looked there, and it was very limited. It was just, you know, early warm-up as he was throwing.
And, you know, a lot of fans have been wondering when exactly Sam Bradford is going to be back, but we're hoping he's back sooner rather than later. And, Doc, just last injury question that we have. We had a potential franchise quarterback, and we've seen him go down with a non-contact knee injury, just a freak injury that rarely happens in sports nowadays. Just shed some light on exactly what happened to Teddy Bridgewater and his expected return.
Okay. Well, I'm going to qualify that answer. I don't know exactly what happened because, of course, I haven't examined Teddy Bridgewater, looked at his MRI scans or x-rays, or talked to the Vikings doctors. Well, I take that back. I've talked to the Vikings doctors. I know Dr. Larson, Dr. Burns. I actually had dinner with Dr. Burns last week. He was out with the Timberwolves, and he also takes care of the Timberwolves. But it is totally wrong of me to ask them medical questions, and they wouldn't tell me. I'm friends with them, but, you know, HIPAA laws and whatever, if they were seeking my opinion, they would tell me that I wouldn't be able to talk about it on a podcast or anything else. They have not sought my opinion. So what I know about Teddy Bridgewater is in the public sphere. So given that caveat, I believe what he had was, and it's pretty clear that he had a dislocated knee, which is why he was rushed to Hennepin County Hospital as opposed to the three or four hospitals that are between Winter Park and Hennepin County, because Hennepin County is a trauma hospital and has emergency services like vascular surgery if he would have needed it, et cetera. And that's the knee dislocation. And that's essentially been confirmed in the media. I can't tell you which ligaments, but anytime you dislocate your knee, there's four main ligaments. There's at least two, if not three, and sometimes four ligaments injured, which is why Teddy Bridgewater is right on pace for what I expected from the get-go. I thought it was a complete pipe dream to think that he's going to be ready to go week one. Hopefully he's going to come off PUP soon. And just to answer the question before you ask, and some have asked on Twitter, no, I'm quite confident Sam Bradford will make it back well before Teddy Bridgewater does.
And before we get you out of here, Doc, because I know your time is running short, there's a lot of games on tonight and people are going to be tweeting you a lot of videos. We just have to ask you, what was your favorite Chargers story from your time with the San Diego Chargers?
Oh, boy. So many to mention. I'll tell you one of the favorite stories of many is I was actually on an airplane. We were I forget the year exactly. I want to say 2011 or 12. Someone can look it up. The Chargers started 4-8, and started. I mean, three quarters of the way through the season, we were 4-8, and everyone thought we were done. And the Broncos were 8-4. And so we had to win four, and Denver had to win four. And we got to 6-8, and then we beat Tampa in Tampa Bay. And we're flying home on the plane. Maybe it was earlier than 2012, maybe 2009 or something, before internet was completely on airplanes. And we're watching, and we're trying to figure out the Denver game. And when Denver lost to make them 8-7, and we were meeting Denver in San Diego for the final game of the season and a winner-take-all for the division, yes, at the division and the playoffs at 8-8, there was the loudest cheer I've ever heard, and guys, happiest as ever, when the Broncos lost that game in the last minute, and it put us back into contention with winning the division. And at that point on the plane, I knew it was a foregone conclusion that we would win.
That's an awesome story. And, you know, before we get out of here, Miles or Yinka, did you guys have any final questions for Doc?
Yeah, I had two final questions. The first question that I had for you, Doc, first and foremost, we appreciate you taking the time out to be able to do this. The first question I would have for you is, there were a lot of reports that saying because of the severity of injury with Teddy Bridgewater's knee that, you know, he could have potentially lost his leg. Can you just quickly just speak to, was that true, or is that just kind of an exaggeration, or how did you see it?
You know, JR, I didn't quite hear that whole question. If you could rephrase it or sum it up for me.
Yeah, so basically all he asked was, there were reports surfacing that Teddy Bridgewater almost lost his leg. Just shed some light on that and exactly why people were thinking that.
Okay, because it was a knee dislocation, and when you dislocate your knee, it is possible to sever the nerve. Thankfully, neither of that happened. If you sever the nerve, that's way worse than Jalen Smith and for the Cowboys, and there's no recovering. But if you sever the artery and the nerve, and especially in a way that is very difficult to repair, that's where you could potentially, quote, lose your leg. A funny anecdote here, if you have the time, is that I literally was in clinic when Teddy Bridgewater injury happened, and word spread quickly about canceling practice. And I actually have had a bunch of media guys, national guys, calling me and texting me and saying, what do you think happened to Teddy Bridgewater? And I replied to them, got any video? They're like, no, it's practice. And I said, well, how can I help you? I mean, I don't know, and I'm not calling the Vikings doctors or anything. And so I got on Twitter, it's actually between patients, and I started looking a little bit, and I realized they canceled practice 10 or 15 minutes into practice. And, like, I've seen it before, you get a bad injury 10 or 15 minutes left to go in practice. I've never heard of canceling it, you know, that quickly into practice. And so that raised my antenna that it was something fantastic. And then I saw a report, a tweet from a local beat reporter in Minnesota, and I don't remember who it was, but the tweet basically was a picture, and it said, of an ambulance, and he said, ambulance here at Winter Park. And my having spent time in Minnesota and the Vikings, I know exactly where that is. And I looked at the picture, and on the side of the ambulance, it said Hennepin County Paramedic. And that's when I went, uh-oh, there's only two possibilities. Either it's a kneecap dislocation where it looked very grotesque, and doctors aren't always at every practice. They usually come at the end. And the athletic trainer, sort of, let's be safe and send them to the trauma place. But I didn't truly believe that, but I wanted to believe that because Eric Sugarman is an excellent athletic trainer. But the only other possibility is that it was a knee dislocation. And why do I say that? That's not something you take to your local hospital. And I know very well between Hennepin County and Winter Park, there's several good hospitals. So that's what led me to say that was a knee dislocation and where it was limb saving, and that's why they went to Hennepin County.
I appreciate the answer, Doc. And final question just from me, giving the maybe the long term issues that both players might have to face, who would you put your money towards that, you know, might have like a longer life with the Vikings if they did have to choose one of the quarterbacks?
Well, first of all, that's why your GM gets paid the big dollars instead of me. I look at medical as just sort of like a 40 time at the combine. One factor, if the kid is a slow 40, but he has game speed, you know, the GM can still make the decision to draft him. But strictly medically speaking, I would clearly have a knee with two ACL reconstructions and a bone bruise than a knee that was dislocated.
Appreciate it, Doc.
Thank you for that, Doc. And Miles, did you have any questions for Doctor before he gets out of here?
I think Prince covered everything.
Okay, good. Doc, once again, we just want to thank you for having you on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Thanks as always. And, you know, likewise, if you ever need anything for us, just let us know. And if you ever if you never ever need anything for us, just let us know. And likewise, we'll definitely be following you on Twitter. Follow Doc again at ProFootballDoc. And Doc, did you have any last words for the people?
No, thanks, guys. Hopefully, maybe I'll run into you this winter and during the Super
Bowl. Yeah, it'd be great. Appreciate having you on. Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Doc. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the second half of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We just wrapped up a great segment with Dr. David J. Chow, who shed some light on Sam Bradford, Dalvin Cook, and Teddy Bridgewater's injury, and shared a great Charger story of his as well. A lot of great insight from Dr. Chow. But we're moving on now. We're on to Chicago, Soldier Field, the field of nightmares for the Vikings. So, Yinka, I'll start with you. How are you feeling heading into Chicago? But first, my bad, what is your question of the night?
Yeah, man, we can't forget about, you know, the traditional question of the day. So this is something I actually been thinking about. We did this, I was part of this, stand-up comedy club at the U, and, something we went around the room with, we talked about, you know, sitcoms that we would come up with, you know, like an idea of something. So if you guys had to create a sitcom, you know, what would it be called? And then what would, like, what would kind of the premise of it be? I'll start with mine. Mine is actually, it would be called, it'd be called Mrs. First Man. What it'd be called. And it would just center around, like, obviously this, the wife became, you know, she became president, you know, she's all smart and all put together and stuff. And she has a, just like a goofy ass husband who just like, I mean, he's bright and creative, but he tends to try to overhelp his wife too often to make sure that she's all good with the country and stuff. And obviously it leads to a bunch of shenanigans, and she has to like either bail him out or he has to like, you know, cover up some mistake that he made that potentially could lead the world to, you know, destruction and all that stuff. So yeah, just, it kind of follows their relationship, their marriage, and, you know, they have kids and stuff. And it's kind of, it's very similar to like a not Arrested Development, but, you know, like it's something similar to that, or Parks and Rec and stuff. So that's my idea.
Miles, what about you?
To be honest, I've never ever thought about it, so I don't know. I mean, I like shows like Parks and Rec and The Office, and I like shows like that, so maybe try to go something along those lines.
Like a football The Office version?
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Or I don't know. As long as it's got Aziz Ansari on it, in it, I think we're good.
I got to go with Miles. I'm not a big sitcom guy, and I really don't know what I would have as my topic of discussion or anything like that. But as well, y'all know,
you could be doing coaching. I mean, essentially we could just set it up. Miles is on the football side of things, kind of the office style, and yours is on the coaching side of things. Maybe you have a head coach who's not too bright, and all the other assistant coaches are a lot smarter than he is. And, you know, he'd be calling dumb things often, but, you know, they have like this little secret thing between the players and the assistant coaches where it's just like, forget everything you say. Just look at all calls. He always the dummy call. So you're welcome, y'all. I just made up shows for you.
We'll take it. We'll go with that.
Run it.
We'll go with it. But as I said before, Detroit is in the rearview window. Tough loss. Moved on from it. Tough divisional loss, but it's time to move on. We're on to Chicago. Going to the Field of Nightmares, Soldier Field. We have been haunted for a very long time. Miles, what's your thoughts heading into Monday?
I don't like, because this is only the fifth game of the season, but, and I hate this phrase this early in the season, but it's kind of one of those like must-win games. Again, I hate it, but I feel like it's just at that point, back-to-back divisional games. You lose one at home to the Detroit Lions. You can't lose to this Chicago Bears team. The Vikings team is a way better team with or without Dalvin Cook than this Chicago Bears team. The only thing that they have right now that's going for them is, you know, they might have a little more excitement than usual because they're starting a brand new rookie quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky. So that could just kind of give them a little bit more of like juice than they might with a guy like Glennon. So it's a little more of a what to expect. You know, does he come out and not really fear the Vikings defense, and does Zimmer, you know, dial back a little bit, which I hope he doesn't. I don't expect him to either, of not going after Trubisky, you know, almost every play. Otherwise, I just kind of want to see, you know, how does this team adapt now that Dalvin Cook's gone? You know, how do they adjust their offense? Because that's what they curtailed the offense around was Cook, and then obviously using Thielen and Diggs. I mean, you get that wrinkle back and potentially using, you know, in Michael Floyd. I'm not sure how much he'll play, but how does this offense adapt with a Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon led run game instead of Dalvin Cook? So that's kind of the biggest story on offense. Defense, can the defense stop the run game? They got gashed by the Lions last week by Amir Abdullah, and the Bears don't have an Amir Abdullah as much. They have Tariq Cohen, who's more of the Darren Sproles type, but which is in a similar sense kind of Amir Abdullah. So curious to see how they counter him, and then what do they do against Jordan Howard? None of the receivers worry me. None of the passing game doesn't worry me. It's the run game for the Bears.
And I agree with a lot of things that you said, especially offensively. How does this team adapt now that Dalvin Cook is shelved for the year with that torn ACL? I really don't know what to expect out of the running game. Latavius Murray, you know, he didn't look really healthy last week. Couldn't really cut or have any burst on that surgery healed ankle. And Jerick McKinnon, we all know he's not an every down back. He's more of the guy that can get 8 to 10 carries max. So it'll be interesting to see how that sequence of running backs, or rotation of running backs, is. We know Stephen Ridley probably won't be in the picture this week just because it's too soon in the process for him, considering they just got signed today. But how will they adjust without the threat of Dalvin Cook being out there, and how many carries will they give Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon? I'm expecting more of a vertical passing game just because I don't think the rushing attack will be the same or as good without Dalvin Cook now out of the picture, just because Murray's not a home run threat or McKinnon's not a home run threat to bust one in a split second like Dalvin was, and they just don't have the ability to consistently break tackles or make people miss in space like Dalvin was. But what we have shown this year is to have a consistent passing game. Diggs and Thielen have played out of their minds this year, and you know, they've provided a great threat for Keenum and Bradford when he was in there. Defensively, I really don't know. They haven't seen Trubisky on film besides the preseason, and we know teams keep it really vanilla during the preseason. They're not going to show all the concepts that they have installed for him. And who knows what concepts they have installed for Trubisky this week just to keep things easier on him. I don't know if Mike Zimmer is going to blitz a lot or if he's going to sit back and play coverage. I highly doubt that he does that. I think he does end up blitzing the young Trubisky a lot and mixing up the looks a lot. That's just my assessment on the game. Yinka, what's your thoughts heading into Soldier Field on Monday?
I mean, it's Miles definitely pinpointed that it is a must-win game, but I think it's another thing. It's also a trap game. We saw it in the last couple of years, especially with Mike Zimmer, is there are some games where I feel like they're not that they're easy wins, because there's no easy wins in the National Football League, but games that should highly favor the Vikings. And I think Zimmer has a tendency to overthink. And, you know, when he overthinks things, he tends to get outcoached. We saw this in the game where, you know, we're facing Carson Wentz last year. We saw this in various situations where it was clear that Vikings had the better, they have the better players. They have, you know, they should have more things going for them on all three phases, but for whatever reason, they fall victim to losing.
Oh, as usual, Prince's Wi-Fi has checked out on us. It happens at least once or twice a show. Hopefully he'll come back. Who knows? We'll see. I wish I could see Yinka. He's actually walking around his room during this pod, working on his throwing form, trying to get ready for those flag football games.
Don't want that to happen for football.
There we go. Yinka, just continue your thoughts on the game and everything.
Sorry, what happened?
We lost you.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, my bad. I just think that essentially what I'm saying is I think this is a trap game. I don't want Mike Zimmer to overthink things and try to do too much. And I think he should just focus on, you know, doing the things he does well and not try to overthink things when it comes to playing against a rookie quarterback.
And, you know, Mitch Trubisky, this is his first NFL start, first career NFL start. Who knows how it'll go? I know a lot of people have been tweeting today that the Vikings are notorious for making rookie quarterbacks look really good. And, I mean, Trubisky looked really well in the preseason. He performed really well when he was in there. And a lot of people were high on Trubisky coming out. He was a lot of people's first quarterback on the board, or tops on their board, and he was the first quarterback taken this year in the draft. The Bears traded some draft picks for him. They moved up to get him, moved up one spot for him. So they really wanted him, and they don't really have a lot of pieces around him right now. They have a really good running game with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. But on the perimeter, he really doesn't have a lot to work with. The tight ends are okay. Zach Miller is okay. Their offensive line, their interior offensive line is good, but their tackles aren't really good right now. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot. I need a score prediction and a bold prediction heading into Monday. Starting off with you, Yinka.
Score prediction. I think this is a game Vikings can score. I would say, you know, I'm worried about it being a trap game, but I still think the Vikings can win. So I'm going to say 27-21 Vikings. Bold prediction. Let's see. Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs are both 100-yard receivers in this game.
Is that really bold, though?
Yeah, I mean, usually, I mean, the weird thing is, you know, one kind of has a slightly better. Okay, here's what I'll say. Both wide receivers are going to be both 150-yard wide receivers this game.
There you go. That's bold. That's definitely bold.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Miles, what about you?
I'm going to go. I don't think it's going to be all that high scoring. I think it's going to be 20-10 Vikings. I'm going to go. The Vikings pick off Trubisky three times and create up to five turnovers.
Oh, that's very bold. I'm going to go, I'm going to say 17-13. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. Rain is in the forecast, so it's going to be slippery. We know Soldier Field is not the best surface for playing on game day, so the Vikings offense, I just don't know. I didn't like what I saw last week from the running game, and I think Dalvin Cook is going to prove to be a major loss. So I don't really see them scoring a ton of points this week. And the Bears with the rookie quarterback, I don't see them scoring a ton of points. So I got a 17-13 Vikings. My bold prediction, I'm kind of contradicting myself. I think Latavius Murray goes over 100 yards.
I was going to use that one too. I almost did.
I think that's very, very bold on my part, considering I'm not a big Latavius Murray fan, just based off what I saw last week. But – I mean, we gave him $5 million a year in the offseason, signed a three-year, $15 million contract. So he has a chance to prove his worth right now. And this is what he thought he was walking into now that Dalvin Cook is gone. And we signed him before even drafting Dalvin Cook. So this is what Latavius Murray wanted. This is the opportunity he wanted. Hopefully he'll seize the moment. So any upcoming projects from you guys that you want to plug or previous work that you've done, starting off with you, Yinka?
No, I think I might do a preview for the Bears game. Yeah, and I might do a kind of just like a first quarter, what we look like. Just break down, you know, some areas that we're working, some areas that need to improve. Yeah, and that'll come on various sites that I write for. So,
Miles, you got anything upcoming?
I've been getting into college a lot more as of late, and now that I kind of got my new computer, my new work situated, I'm gonna start writing up some stuff. It's coming. I promise. It's coming.
We definitely will be expecting that. Who's some guys you like in the draft so far this year that you've seen, Miles?
Oh, man. Got me on the spot here because I mean, right now, a lot of the big name guys that I've watched, you know, the Connor Williams, the Arden Key, you know, a lot of those guys. But I'm gonna start diving into the guys that people aren't hearing about. But
do any of you guys like Quentin Nelson at all?
Who? Oh,
Quentin Nelson.
I think he'd be a great fit for the Vikings.
He definitely would be a great fit, and he's very, very likable, and definitely a Vikings Twitter favorite, as we've seen over the past few days and up to this point. So Quentin Nelson definitely is a Vikings Twitter favorite. Yinka is really laughing really hard right now, which is hilarious. Oh,
another guy I really like. I know you don't like him as much, Jared, but I'm a Luke Falk guy. I still like Luke from Washington State. I think he's gonna be like a mid third day guy that I think could potentially be like a hot, you know, go in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah actually tweeted about him, and he shared an article that he wrote just asking some scouts what they thought of him, and the comparisons were really all over the place, but
yeah,
very similar players. I know Matt Hasselbeck and Kirk Cousins were two players that were very comparable in his article, and I think you're exactly right. I like Luke Falk. I think he can definitely fall into a Kirk Cousins-like situation somebody takes a quarterback high, and they come back in the fourth or fifth round or even the third round and take Luke Falk, and he ends up being the better player out of the two. I definitely could see a situation like that.
He'll be a New England Patriot.
I can't I can't wait till my brother joins the Vikings so he can pick off Luke Falk again once he gets drafted in the preseason. It's going to happen. Book it.
That definitely will be something we'll be looking forward to, and just tracking the progress of your brother. Yinka is still baller's life mode right now, throwing the football all over his room right now.
Hey, man, I ball's life, man.
We need an update on the flag football game.
The game got canceled.
So the game last week got canceled. Miles is actually supposed to come out, and we have another game that's coming Friday. Obviously, the Vikings game. So, you know, I'll be there for
Monday,
part of this. Monday. I'll be there on Monday, so I'll miss part of the game. I'm hoping Miles can join the following Monday, and then we can ball out. Y'all can see what Prince actually produces when he has the number one wide receiver. So I'm a system quarterback.
How's the install going? I know you were saying you were installing a couple plays this week. How's that going?
Yeah, I feel bad for your teammates. Prince is at work, like, drawing up plays, like, hey, what do y'all think of this?
The funny thing is, I was just going through some stuff today. I just kind of looked at which plays I like better, to be zone versus man. Because a lot of people, they'll play, they'll start to play man, but then they'll drop into a zone. And I haven't quite got to install with them yet, but I'm definitely refining it. So it's a lot easier for me to just relay it to them, and, you know, they can remember it really easy. So it's only four plays so far.
we're definitely going to need some video evidence and some footage, because
we can't really grade
your performance without any tape.
Yeah, we need film. We need film. You know, me being a film guy, I have to agree with that. But I do have somebody who will be coming out on Monday, take film for me, and then y'all.
You gotta get that yards per attempt up, though, man. Come on.
Hey, my yards per attempt is actually pretty good. It's my and my ADOT's pretty good too. It's just that I've actually been really good in the intermediate game. Surprisingly enough, I've been good in the long game, been good in the short game. Intermediate game needs to get stepped up a little bit. That's where my interceptions are coming from. So,
that's your favorite quarterback's, like, that's his bread and butter.
It used to always be my bread and butter, but now I've been throwing the ball more accurate down the field. And then when no one can get open, I find my check down. but intermediate, I'm just not playing well, y'all. Just not. I'm just going to admit it to you right now. Not playing well.
So you're like Eli Manning right now, then?
Yeah, and I'm trying to be more like Teddy. Where, you know, I was always good in the short and intermediate game. And then, you know, I never really was good because I didn't have the strong arm to throw down the field. But, you know, I've been working out a little bit, and arm's a little bit stronger. And, you know, driving with the leg, getting a good base, and ball soaring out my hands. So.
Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to the film from the next flag football game. And we can only grade what you put on film, Prince. We haven't seen any clips so far, but we'll definitely be looking forward to that. On behalf of the whole Climbing the Pocket team, I'm JR, Miles, Yinka, signing out. Thank y'all for listening.
Prince, you took all the questions.
I didn't know if he had anyone's, but those are just
the ones
that
I was going to, but.
Oh, my bad, man.